This show furnished by Dual Diagnosis Treatment Center.
Welcome to In Your Right Mind, a weekly discussion of behavioral health issues that affect our lives. We all have issues, so let's start talking.
Welcome to In Your Right Mind, a weekly discussion of behavioral health issues that affect our lives. We all have issues, so let's start talking. My name is Stephanie Wilder Taylor.
And I'm Dr. Tanmoy Sharma.
On tonight's show, we're talking about success. And when we think about success, probably most people think of having $1 billion in the bank, lots of power, and the option to never have to set an alarm clock again. Or maybe that's just me. But according to the dictionary, success is simply defined as the accomplishment of an aim or purpose. But no matter how we define it, we can all agree that we want to feel successful in life. But what is the secret to success?
Well, I can tell you one thing that successful people do have in common, and that's emotional intelligence. Apart from other things, it seems to be a requirement for success. A study once found they tested emotional intelligence alongside 33 other important skills in the workplace and found that emotional intelligence was by far the strongest predictor of performance and accounted for 58% of success in all types of jobs. It also seems that people with a high degree of emotional intelligence make about $29,000 per year more than their the other counterparts that have low emotional intelligence or EQ.
Well, luckily, on our show, we have a couple of experts in the field of emotional intelligence. Dr. Robin Stern is the Associate Director for the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. She's a licensed psychoanalyst, and she's on the faculty of Teachers College at Columbia University, where she co-teaches a class on emotional intelligence. She's also the author of three books, including the upcoming The Gaslight Effect, How to Spot and Survive the Hidden Manipulation Others Use to Control Your Life.
And also with us is Dr. David Caruso, is a psychologist that has contributed enormously to emotional intelligence and its training around the world. He is the special assistant to the dean of Yale University. He also co-authored the practical how-to book, The Emotionally Intelligent Manager, which introduced the mood meter and blueprint concepts. He's also a co-author of The Emotionally Literate Teacher, The Emotionally Literate School Administrator. He's a co-developer of the test Mesquite. He'll talk more about it. My relationship with Mesquite goes back several years. Maybe I'm dating myself now. The FDA was looking to test cognition in schizophrenia. People were using different types of tests, and Dr. Robert Bilder and I had developed CogTest to measure cognition. And this, I was very interested in this whole concept of social cognition. We used to call it sort of hot cognition and cold cognition. So planning, strategizing, calculating, memory. This was sort of cold cognition. And this whole area of social cognition was coming up at that time. And how do you test for social cognition? And the Matrix program or batch of tests were put together. And Mesquite was one of those. And this is 2006, 2007, something like that. So welcome to the show, Dr. Caruso.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Stern, how are you guys?
Well, thank you for having me as well. I'm thrilled to be here and thrilled to be here, David, with you as well. I think it's going to be a great hour, and I hope people learn a lot.
Our audience is a lay one. So, you know, everybody understands what intelligence is, and it might be good, as we are early in the show, to talk about what is emotional intelligence.
Either one of you can take that.
Well, maybe we can just take turns then.
Sure.
So we think about it as being smart, the ability to be smart about your feelings. So we know that people have feelings all day long, every day. And we know that they matter a great deal for all of our lives, for our ability to pay attention, for our ability to make decisions, have relationships, have good physical and mental health, and to just be effective in our lives every day. And so the ability to use our feelings wisely in the service of our goals every single day is emotional intelligence. And we think of it as the acronym RULER, the skills of recognizing, understanding, labeling, expressing, and regulating. And David, I'll pass it to you now.
Beyond that, Robin, I would say that emotional intelligence is an intelligence. I mean, Conway, you mentioned the Mesquite or the Mayer Salve Caruso emotional intelligence test. So it's not the opposite of IQ. They go hand in hand. It is a hard skill. A lot of people, when they talk about emotional intelligence, they'll say now it's time for soft skills or soft skill training. But it's very much of a hard skill. As Robin said, it's being smart about emotions. It's using your intellect along with emotions in order to achieve your goals.
And we've seen this used in both populations that have psychopathology and sometimes with no psychopathology, like managers that can improve their performance. But can these things be taught? Some people seem to be skeptical that, you know, EQ is there or not there and cannot be taught.
You know, I'm not sure, so I haven't made up my mind. Sometimes there are studies that say maybe you can teach it.
Right.
Sometimes it says maybe you can't, but I don't think it matters. Because what we know you can do is you can learn skills. You can learn compensatory strategies or remedial strategies. And I like to call it like basically a GPS for emotions.
Right.
Just like if you have terrible spatial ability and I try to teach you how to read a map to go to a new place, I don't know if you're going to get much better, but I can guarantee you won't get lost by buying you a GPS and putting it in your car. And we can do the same thing, I think, for emotional intelligence. We can give you some remedial skill so that you can pick up on the emotions of others, for example, with a few helpful strategies and tips.
I just want to remind our listeners that if they're just tuning in, you're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. We're talking about emotional intelligence with our guest, Dr. Robin Stern, Associate Director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence, and Dr. David Caruso, Management Psychologist who develops and conducts emotional intelligence training around the world. And David, you were telling me earlier about something that people could do. Maybe some people aren't good at reading tone of voice. Like when they say, how are you? And the person says, I'm okay. What's something somebody could do if they're not good at picking up on somebody's cues?
Yeah, that's a great example, Stephanie, because we ask that question, how are you, dozens of times a day, or people ask us. And as you just said, well, it's just, the answer could be fine, okay. And, well, actually, let's start with that. Stephanie, how are you today?
I'm okay.
Right. Unfortunately, you know, you were too expressive. Right? You know, we can tell there's something going on there. But, you know, what I do with this training, most people, what do most people say when you just ask them
I'm good.
In a group setting or one-on-one? Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine.
Good.
And what does it actually mean? It means nothing. I mean, you just told me nothing. You could be either incredibly happy or deeply depressed. So we can teach people that remedial or GPS for emotions strategies and simply say things like, Stephanie, scale of 0 to 10, how is this interview going so far? What would you say?
I'd give it a 9.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it.
All right, you're too generous. but even then, here's the follow-up question.
Okay.
What do we need to do to get to a 10?
Pay me more money. Just kidding.
Right.
A little joke.
Check is in the mail.
Well, so are you saying...
Stephanie and yes. David, I'm going to jump in because I really like the way you started with asking about tone of voice. And David, I'm going to leave that to you because you were starting in that vein. And I'm just going to jump on the vocabulary piece because you were in that territory as well. So when you say, fine... think about that. What's the reason that we're not more granular, that we're not more, we're not better able to identify the specific name of the feeling we're having at any given moment? Well, we would say, I think you would agree with me, David, that we don't have formal education in identifying emotions. We don't have formal education in learning about emotions to begin with. And so we know as emotion scientists and practitioners in the field that the difference, for example, between anger and disappointment is not only a big difference, but also a thematic difference. also important to understand and communicate. So we know that it's a basic human need to feel seen and understood. And when you can accurately describe what you're feeling, other people can then understand. And when you can listen and be able to discriminate, be more granular about what other people are feeling, then you know them better. So and anger is... Sorry, go ahead, Stephanie.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask if that's also important to be able to identify it in yourself. So are some people just, they think they're angry all the time, but maybe they're all actually disappointed, and it helps them to be able to recognize their own feelings?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you can understand what caused your feeling. So, for example, the theme underlying anger is injustice or unfairness. The theme underlying disappointment is unmet expectations. So if I take an exam that I've studied for and I think I'm going to do really well and I don't do well, I'm going to be disappointed in myself. But if I've studied for an exam and I go in and take the exam and my professor has changed all the questions from the study guide, I'm probably going to be angry that that was unfair. And understanding that emotion in myself will help me, as we say, name it to tame it. So that which I'm going to do about my emotions is going to be different if I'm angry or disappointed.
That's so interesting. We need to go to our first break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a lot more about emotional intelligence and find out if it can be taught. You're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, brought to you by Sovereign Health. We'll be right back.
It had taken over my life. It needed to be stopped.
Addiction doesn't discriminate. At Sovereign Health, we target underlying conditions that occur along with addiction. Our clinical experts provide both individual and group therapy and retrain the addicted brain through cognitive enhancement.
Getting treatment at Sovereign, it's what gave me my life back.
Call 866-201-8710. That's 866-201-8710. Or visit us at sovhealth.com. Nearly half of all Americans experience a mental illness at some point in their lives. Sovereign Health offers treatment programs for depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, post-traumatic stress disorder, eating disorders, and other mental health issues, with an individualized treatment plan that meets your needs. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0011. That's 866-202-0011. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
We didn't know what to do. We were at a loss.
Sovereign Health's Rancho San Diego facility provides individualized mental health, substance abuse, and dual diagnosis treatment to teens in a safe, nurturing environment.
Everybody there seemed really caring about.
Don't lose sight on finding the best help for your child. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0308. That's 866-202-0308. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
We are back with In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. I'm Stephanie Wilder-Taylor. We're tackling the topic of emotional intelligence and how it relates to success with our guests, Dr. Robin Stern, Associate Director of Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence, also the author of The Gaslight Effect, and Dr. David Caruso, a management psychologist and co-author of the how-to book, The Emotionally Intelligent Manager.
I wanted to ask about emotional intelligence and its relationship, if any, to IQ that our listeners are very familiar with. So maybe, Dr. Caruso, you can respond to that.
There are many different definitions of emotional intelligence. Sometimes people will refer to it as EQ. A lot of those approaches are basically rehashed or warmed over traditional personality traits like optimism, assertiveness, and so forth. But in our view, emotional intelligence, as we said, is a hard skill, it's a technical skill, it's an intelligence. So that means it is related in a positive way to IQ. Now, it's not that you have to trade 5 IQ points to get five more EI points. They are related. You can have people who are really smart in the traditional sense and also highly emotionally intelligent. And we know this because we have an objective ability-based measure of emotional intelligence. We give that to people and we ask them to take other tests, traditional IQ tests and other kinds of assessments, and we find out, as it should be, that These things are related. And I think it's something that a lot of people don't realize, that you can be smart in lots of different ways. One does not preclude the other.
Let me put this in sort of a lay term for me, too. My husband is incredibly intelligent, but he always tells me that he lacks the ability to read a room. Would you say that that is a EQ or EI kind of issue? He calls it that. He's unable to sometimes read between the lines, understand the mood, understand sort of what's going on, despite the fact that he's highly intelligent.
We have to test him to find out. But based on what you said, that, you know, he's lacking the ability, perhaps, to perceive emotions accurately in others. And that is one of the emotional intelligence abilities that we measure. He's an exception to that overall rule. But the relationship, it's not perfect. If you look at the research, there is a modest or moderate correlation between IQ and emotional intelligence. But it's not perfect. And I think we tend to think of outliers, you know, Stephanie, like your husband, perhaps. And we don't think about smart people who are also super empathic, have a great ability to understand emotions, are good at managing their own emotions and those of others. So those people do exist, and there's a lot of them out there.
Let me talk a little bit about the pathology side of it. I know we're talking about performance improvement and various other things. And if we liken emotional intelligence to social cognition, and you may have some thoughts about that, but for the moment, what I want to ask is, say in autism, people lose they've never developed the ability to read emotions, for example, social cognition. And in schizophrenia, patients lose the ability, the social cognition ability a lot of the time. How do you think that is related to EQ, or are they synonymous?
I think emotional intelligence is part of what you're calling social cognition. It's how to think about emotions and also to think with emotions. So in other words, it's reading people, it's reading them accurately, it's reading the room, as Stephanie mentioned before. It's also being able to have emotions help you think. A lot of times we're taught or trained that emotions get in our way, you should leave them at the door. But there's some really good data out there that indicates that emotions can help you think and make good decisions. In fact, some neuroscientists will say in the absence of emotion, you don't make good decisions. So emotional intelligence could be classed in that social cognition category.
Right.
And there are people, like with schizophrenia or perhaps with autism, who lack these skills.
Right. So then the question arises, as we've talked about a little earlier in the show, can these be taught? For example, in autism, you've got sort of mind blindness, as Simon Baron Cohen puts it. Can we teach people with autism, and can we teach people with schizophrenia how to improve their social cognition or EQ? I know they're not equivalent, but I would value your thoughts.
I think we can teach people almost anything. Some of us have to work harder at it. But as Robin was talking about earlier, a lot of people lack the vocabulary of emotions. They don't have a feelings word vocabulary that's well established. You can teach them that language. You can
right.
teach them those compensatory strategies. They have to want to learn it, but there are lots of strategies around emotion vocabulary, perceiving emotions. Emotion management is a great area. Those are things you can pull emotion management strategies out of lots of other therapies, cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, stuff from addictions research,
right.
how to have people learn impulse control, taking a pause. And in fact, one of the things or techniques that Robin came up with is super helpful, I think, for people with autism especially, and that's called a meta moment. And we should all learn a meta moment.
Right. We're going to come to the meta moment in a moment.
Yeah, I just want to remind people, if they're just tuning in, that they're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. We're talking about how you can learn emotional intelligence with our guests, Dr. Robin Stern and Dr. David Caruso.
I seem to remember reading a paper many, many moons ago about the triad of cognition, motivation, and is the third one emotional intelligence? I forgot. This is a long time ago. I don't know if any of you remember and how they're kind of related.
I'm not sure. So
okay.
it depends on, again, a lot of this depends on your definition of emotional intelligence. So for some people, especially years ago, it's kind of this big Rorschach inkblot. You read into it what you want to see. Whereas we're fairly narrow in our definition of emotional intelligence as a set of skills, as an intelligence, or what's called a broad intelligence that's related to IQ and is a series of hard skills or technical skills.
Well, go
if you
back.
Look at it that way. It takes on you put a different light on that skill.
I'm interested in some of these techniques that you use, the ruler approach. And tell us more about the meta moment. What exactly is a meta moment?
So I actually was going to jump in to talk about the meta moment when you mentioned motivation, because when we think about the skills of emotional intelligence and the knowledge behind them that we define in the acronym RULER, recognizing, understanding, labeling, expressing, and regulating emotions, and we look particularly at regulating emotions, which is a master skill, and often can derail you in relationships and in performance. We think about how do we regulate our emotions? The question comes up, well, why bother regulating our emotions? Like, what is the reason? What's the motivation for someone to pause when they're triggered before they respond?
So we don't lash out? So we don't lash out at people and ruin relationships?
Okay, so, but why is it important?
So we don't scare everybody around us?
So we don't scare people so that people see us in a certain way, so that we see ourselves in a certain way, so that we can maintain relationships, and all of that is true. And so we think about the meta moment as the space and time between when we're triggered and when we respond, and the motivation that we can harness to do that is to be our best self. So when you take that pause between being triggered and responding in actions or words, it's not just taking a deep breath or counting to 10 or pinching yourself so that you just slow down for a minute. We invite people to think of their best selves, which is a combination of your ideal self, the self you'd like to be when you, if you imagine your best, and also the reputation you want to have. And that provides a lot of motivation for people.
I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. I think that it is really interesting and important, because it allows you to, when you think about your best self and you take that meta moment and invoke that image of your best self, you're really connecting to your values. So who am I, and who do I want to be at my best, and how can I impact the development of my own reputation? What are those adjectives that I want people to see me as? And so when I think about that, provides a lot of motivation for me to take a pause. One of the examples I use all the time is I take meta moments all the time as a mom. You know, my kids are in their 20s, and when they call me, and if I'm activated in one way or another, or they're making a decision that I want to weigh in on, I'm going to pause before I respond. Most of the time, I'm successful at that, not all the time. Well, and I really invoke an image of my best self. Well, who is the mom I want to be right now? Do I want to be a mom who is critical and shutting my kids' dreams down, or do I want to be the mom who's supporting my kids' dreams?
It's such a good example. Because kids are very triggering, and I think a lot of parents can relate to that as a helpful tool in parenting.
Yeah, and I find that you need meta moments very often as a parent.
Dr. Sharma has a question, but unfortunately we have to take one more quick break, and then we'll come back with more about success with Dr. Robin Stern and Dr. David Caruso. You're listening to In Your Right Mind, brought to you by Sovereign Health. We'll be right back.
Trauma can have a negative effect on your mental health and well-being. At Sovereign Health, our clinicians create an individualized program that addresses trauma, substance misuse, and mental health difficulties while promoting strength and mental wellness. Call Sovereign Health at 866-201-9702. That's 866-201-9702. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
Are you or a loved one suffering from an eating disorder? At Sovereign Health, we believe these brain diseases that strain people's lives should not define them. Let us help you heal in a safe, nurturing environment with an individualized treatment plan that has your unique qualities and meets your treatment needs. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0209. That's 866-202-0209. Or visit us online at sovhealth.com.
We didn't know what to do. We were at a loss.
Sovereign Health's Rancho San Diego facility provides individualized mental health, substance abuse, and dual diagnosis treatment to teens in a safe, nurturing environment.
Everybody there seemed really caring about.
Don't lose sight on finding the best help for your child. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0308. That's 866-202-0308. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Plenty of action in the last minute of play in the NFC Divisional Playoff game between the Saints and the Vikings today. In the fourth quarter, the Saints, who had trailed the whole game, scored a field goal with less than a minute remaining, thanks to kicker Will Lutz, Saints 24, Vikings 23. Then, with less than 10 seconds left in the game, a 61-yard passing touchdown to Stephon Diggs gave the Vikings a ticket to the NFC Championship game against the Eagles. Final score, Vikings 29, Saints 24. Earlier in the day, the Jaguars held off the Steelers, who had mounted a surge toward the end of the game. Final score, the Jags 45, the Steelers 42. The Jaguars now go up against New England in the AFC Championship game. KABC SoCal weather tonight, partly cloudy with lows in the lower to mid-50s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with highs from the mid to upper 60s at the beaches to the mid-70s inland. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Getting support from friends online kept me on track.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
Instead of smoking after I ate, I'd get up and take a walk.
I missed having a cigarette in my hand, so I'd hold a pen or a straw, anything.
Until I knew I wouldn't give in to temptation, I spent more time with my friends who didn't smoke.
I went to places that were smoke-free.
I didn't stay quit the very first time I tried.
I kept on trying, and I learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
I quit.
I quit.
I quit.
We did it, so can you.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We are back with In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. I'm Stephanie Wilder-Taylor. We're tackling the topic of emotional intelligence with Dr. Robin Stern, Associate Director of Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. She's also the author of The Gaslight Effect. And Dr. David Caruso, management psychologist and co-author of the book, The Emotionally Intelligent Manager.
Dr. Caruso, for a long time, you've done this work on emotional intelligence and the wonderful tests that you have developed. Tell us a little bit about the mood meter, and after that, what is Blueprint?
for many, many years, I've been talking about emotional intelligence, doing research, but also doing very hands-on practical skill-building sessions with managers. I'd start out saying, well, how are you feeling? And they would say, fine or okay or good. I said, no, you know, how are you really feeling? And they still lack the vocabulary. So what can you boil the question down to? And emotions researchers who look at the measurement of emotions believe that emotions can be plotted on two dimensions. And a graph, one axis, maybe the x-axis, is how activated you are. We use the term sometimes energy. So maybe 0 to 10. How energized are you? 0 to 10. And then on the other axis, y-axis, what's your feeling? What's your level of pleasantness like? 0 to 10. 0 is really unpleasant. 10 is highly pleasant. And we just ask you to think about that. That does require some reflection. And then plot yourself on that mood meter. And it's a very basic way to help people try to reflect and introspect and enhance their ability to understand how they feel, as well as share it with other people. And it's pretty surprising, because if you don't read the room well and you ask people to plot their current mood on a mood meter and then share it with others, a lot of people are surprised by the entry that they see on that graph.
Mm-hmm. And the blueprint.
I just want to say something else about the mood meter, because we found it to be a really powerful tool. If you think about, as David described, there are two axes, an axis of pleasantness and energy. And if you can visualize, then the mood meter is broken up into four smaller squares. So we have one large square that's bounded by these two axes and four smaller squares. And when you think about your entire day, like as you move through the day every day, where do you live most of the time? Are you in a high energy, high pleasant space? Are you in a high pleasant but lower energy quadrant? Are you in a low energy, low pleasantness quadrant, or low energy, high energy, low pleasantness? And people, when we ask people to think about where they live every single day and what brings them to each one of those different quadrants, we'll often have insight into or an awareness of, oh my God, you know what? When I wake up and I'm in a good mood, I'm high energy, I'm feeling pleasant. And then I go to work and I am frazzled out of my mind. I'm stressed out of my mind. So I spend a lot of time to the left of that, to the left of the mood meter, high energy and low pleasantness. And it can give you a lot of insight just to be able to plot yourself in one of the four quadrants of the mood meter. So it's very useful to track your own patterns and also to think about how you might shift from one quadrant of the mood meter to another. I know it's a little hard because we're not looking at the mood meter now, so it may be hard to visualize it, but it is a visual tool, and it can help you to track your emotions, to build your vocabulary, and to build strategies to regulate your emotions.
It sounds like you're also kind of saying that if you wake up and you're in a good mood, then is that your natural set point? And then if you're noticing that, you know, you go to work and you're not in that good space, then maybe instead of just assuming that that's just how things are, then maybe that's something that you need to pay attention to, improve your work life. Am I off track?
I think that where you spend most of your time, like your resting pulse emotionally, is where we think of it as where you live on the mood meter. And sometimes people wake up like that, and sometimes people wake up irritated because they don't want to get out of bed and they have to go to work. So it may not be their necessarily their resting pulse. But it is interesting to think about, especially if you're thinking about all those people you live with, because is their resting emotional pulse higher energy, lower energy, more negative, more positive, and could that then impact the way you get along or the way you don't get along when you're in conflict?
Good. Again, coming to a clinical population, it looks like this emotional dysregulated population, people that are classified as having problems with emotions, specifically borderline personality disorder. I wonder if there's any research on how, because their main problem is emotional dysregulation. Is there anything in the literature that can help such people, specifically with the techniques that you have and EQ? And if there isn't, it's okay. Just that it's a interesting population whose main problem is emotional regulation.
As you know, it's probably the single toughest population to deal with, right? Because you have, you know, cutting behaviors,
yes,
and so forth. So our work really isn't specifically applied to that population. DBT may be the best possibility. But I wonder if some of the other strategies,
yes,
especially around emotion regulation and management.
I completely believe in what you guys do. And I in those early days where psychiatrists at those days were not talking about, you know, social cognition in its broader concept. It just, okay, this is IQ testing that psychologists do. I think that bringing such techniques into the and having clinical implications is, maybe we'll give it a try. We can talk certainly offline about it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to hurt.
Yes, yes.
You're probably yes, you know, at your facility using DBT techniques. Some
yes,
of those are,
yes,
you know, obviously you're really focused on emotions.
Yes.
And I think some of these tools could be extremely helpful around, for also even identifying how are you, or, you know, how do you wake up? Where, as Robin
yeah,
said, where do you live typically in that mood meter? What triggers you? What sets you off? Meta moment could help. And I think the blueprint, which is a very thoughtful tool, might be really helpful. And I wonder, Robin, do you want to talk about the blueprint?
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. And we're talking about emotional intelligence with our guests, Dr. Robin Stern and Dr. David Caruso.
Yeah, so I can talk about the blueprint, but I just wanted to add to what you were just talking about regarding clinical populations. So we're moving a little bit in that direction. As David said, the populations we've worked with have not been the clinical populations, but now we're getting more and more requests from school counselors and mental health workers to do a training for them and to think about how we might use the mood meter in the counselor's office, or how the school counselor and the clinician might think about incorporating the blueprint into their practice, or the process of blueprinting. So the blueprint is our tool for really unpacking an ongoing conflict or an upcoming conflict. So it's not just about taking that meta moment where you want to manage yourself before you respond, but rather really understanding not only what you are thinking and feeling and how you're regulating yourself in a conflict, but how the other person is thinking and feeling and regulating himself or herself and the impact of that. So we think of it as the tool that helps us move from me to we.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's something going on, for example, between two kids or two friends, and rather than saying in a typical timeout way, why don't you take a moment and go and sit down and think about it? We're saying that to both people who were in the conflict, and so that each one of them is having an opportunity then to think about being in a more empathic position cognitively, of taking perspective, of trying to understand not only themselves and their motivations, but the person on the other side. And we're working right now on rethinking the blueprint and thinking, well, what do we do when we know, for example, what I'm feeling, and when you tell me what you're feeling, how do we then bring that back to a more peaceful place in the classroom, or how do we keep that as an active blueprint in our mind as we're having a conversation? What am I feeling? What are you feeling? And how does that impact me, and how am I impacting you?
I think this could also be incredibly helpful in recovery, Dr. Sharma.
Yes, and also in Utah, we treat boys with conduct disorders, where you have, you know, ingrained, well, we think it's ingrained personality, but the traits that are there. But I think the ability to become more humane, more emotionally regulated, if you like, is an important asset. In the area of substance use disorders or addiction, you have issues of impulse control. You have issues where they cannot do any forward planning, or they don't pick up, or they have either they don't pick up cues, or the cues that they pick up are incorrect, and they associate these cues with behavior that is damaging.
Or you can't regulate your emotions or understand what you're feeling, so you use a substance to numb those feelings. But if you could identify what you're feeling, you could deal with it. I want to talk more about all of this, but we need to have one more break. And you're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and I'm Stephanie Wilder-Taylor. It's brought to you by Sovereign Health. We will be right back.
My faith in my higher power, as I understand him, has got to be first in my life, or else recovery, nothing else will work.
At Sovereign Health, we understand that the Christian faith is an integral part of recovery. If you're suffering from an addiction or mental illness, let us help you heal with others who share your beliefs and values. Call Sovereign Health today at 866-201-9005. That's 866-201-9005. Or visit us online at sovhealth.com.
Is your battle with mental illness or addiction a daily struggle?
Everybody was a mature adult wanting this treatment.
Sovereign Health's Power Program uses evidence-based treatment to create a lasting recovery in an environment suited to women over 40. Start your recovery at Sovereign Health with the Power Program today. Call 866-202-0303. That's 866-202-0303. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
For people that need help, this is the place to be.
Are you tired of struggling with your mental health or addiction? Sovereign Health's Prime program aims to help men over 40 overcome mental illness and chemical dependency in an environment suited to their age and needs. Enter a state of lasting recovery with Sovereign Health and get your life back. Call 866-201-8804. That's 866-201-8804. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills,
our math, our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
We are back with In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. I'm Stephanie Wilder-Taylor. We have been spilling the secrets to emotional intelligence with Dr. Robin Stern, Associate Director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence, and Dr. David Caruso, a management psychologist and co-author of the book, The Emotionally Intelligent Manager.
So we were talking about addiction before the break and how emotional intelligence can assist in the treatment of addiction. Dr. Caruso, any thoughts?
We know that with adolescents who are more emotionally intelligent are less likely to engage in those kinds of impulsive behaviors. So they're less likely to smoke, less likely to drink, less likely to engage in risky sexual behavior, and especially for boys, less likely to get into physical altercations. So those first few findings would say that these skills may offer some sort of protective device for adolescents, and at least the little data we have, it might be a little more important for boys that these skills can help them avoid those kinds of addictive behaviors to start with. Not sure.
But David, I'm sure you would agree with me that it makes complete sense that if you are able to understand what you're feeling and you're able to name your feeling and you're able to skillfully manage your feeling, you're less likely to engage in unhelpful ways of managing your feelings.
Right. You turn to drinking or drugs in order to calm yourself, or because you don't understand this amazing swirl of emotions that you're experiencing, especially as an adolescent. It's really a really hard time of life. So, yeah, Robin, I do. Yeah, I would agree.
Some of these skills are things that people use in recovery as it is, so that carry on way past when you're first quitting drinking. But things like your meta moment is something that people call like pause when agitated. Stop and thinking through a drink. Some of these tools sound like very similar to tools that you're teaching, which I think could be really helpful to people.
And it's always so sad to think, on the one hand, but fortunate to think that people are learning them when they're in recovery rather than beforehand. So sad that they didn't learn them beforehand, but happy that thankfully they're learning them there. But I don't know about you, but I certainly didn't grow up in a home where when I went downstairs and I was up from my bedroom and I was upset about something, my parents said to me, well, let me see, I have a research-based strategy for you to try out right now. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, my parents had their own way of dealing with difficult emotions. My mother withdrew and my father had a bad temper. And so those were my models. And so I, fortunately, because I had the advantage of having an even temperament, I would look at that and I would think, well, I don't really like that. And then, of course, I was in my own therapy so that I could understand my own feelings. But most of us don't have great role models. And as kids growing up in any home, kids are watching their parents. They're watching the adults around them, and they're learning lessons, right? And mm-hmm. so they're learning lessons about how to manage themselves. So it's partially nature, the hardwiring you're born with, and the nurture, the teaching, the social learning that you're getting. And we're in the business of helping more people get more positive, emotionally intelligent social learning.
So let's talk about how this emotional intelligence can help us be successful in life. I mean, we might need to define success.
Well, what exactly really is success? For example, Mark Cuban, the billionaire investor, says success to him is waking up happy and has nothing to do with money.
But that's because he has money.
Quite true. Warren Buffett says that he measures success by how many people love him, although that's kind of sort of easy to say when you're pretty well off. And Deepak Chopra defines success in life as the continued expansion of happiness and the progressive realization of worthy goals. And lastly, Bill Gates believes success is about having an impact on society. So different people are defining success in different ways. But if we talked about having happiness or being contented, at least with your family life and your workplace and people around you, if you had that slightly broader definition of success, how does emotional intelligence or EQ, what role does EQ play, and what can we do with EQ to be more successful?
Sure. So I think that to be successful, it's very personally defined, and yet each definition seems to have some thread of fulfillment or personal achievement or dreams coming true, and contentment with that or happiness with that. And so to know what that is for yourself, you've got to be able to be aware of who you are and what you want and what lights you up and what brings you down. And so being emotionally intelligent can be a guidepost to or to help set you on a course of knowing what you want to achieve, and using the tools like I mentioned, your best self, the meta moment. What would it be like for me to live as my best self? And what would I want to do? And what would I want to achieve as my best self? And being able to have successful relationship is part and parcel of knowing yourself, of being able to read other people and manage your feelings and express yourself in the right way at the right time with the right people and label emotions accurately. So to me, if you're successful, you're likely to be emotionally intelligent.
You are listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and we're talking about emotional intelligence and its effect on success in life, with Dr. Robin Stern and Dr. David Caruso.
Dr. Caruso, how can somebody measure emotional intelligence? Is this only done by very, you know, skilled and qualified people? I know that you can have online tests to kind of generally test your usual IQ, But obviously you need something like the Wechsler intelligence test for it to be, you know, completely kosher and acceptable. For our general listeners, if they are interested in emotional intelligence in terms of perceiving emotions, using emotions to facilitate thought, understanding emotions and managing their emotions, what should they do?
I am the co-author of an ability-based measure of emotional intelligence. That's my bias. You know, we measure these skills in an objective way. So rather than asking you, are you good at reading people, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 is terrible and 5 is great, that's kind of interesting to know what you think of yourself. But we've gone with a more of a performance-based measure. And so we show you somebody's face who is experiencing or expressing an emotion, then there's a right or wrong or answer to it. So I think that's probably the best way to measure your emotional intelligence. You need to find a qualified person to administer that assessment.
Mm-hmm. Or a quiz on Facebook.
Yeah, well, you could try that one as well.
I took one of those.
It wouldn't, you know, a slightly better approach might be to ask people who know you well.
I think what you're talking about is sort of emotional recognition in terms of, I think Rubin Gurr did some work at UPenn on that as well. Mainly in the area of schizophrenia, but what I'm thinking is, what is the correlation between self-report and and this? Because it's an important thing. You might ask somebody, "Are you great?" And I might think, "I am really great, but I'm really lousy," and recognizing that Stephanie is annoyed with me. So,
that's the exact problem, right? Which is the correlation between what I think of my emotional intelligence and your actual abilities about 0.15. It's really low. And the story is actually worse.
Right.
There's a wonderful study done by just a few years ago that used our test and asked people before they took it what they thought of their skills, and I think afterwards how they thought they did.
Right.
And the lower scoring people were likely to overestimate and the higher scoring people to underestimate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even worse than it sounds. Like, that low correlation is even worse than it sounds.
In both sides of the equation.
So the people that really need this test are probably the least likely to seek it out.
Well, they are least likely to seek it out, and what's even more disturbing is that when they take it and they get the feedback, they're most likely to dismiss its validity and also the relevance of the skills, and that's really disturbing.
Yeah,
and it means you really need very advanced skills, I think,
to
give feedback to somebody like that.
So where could people go if they want to test their emotional intelligence? Do you have some resources?
Well, yes and no, Stephanie, because, you know, it's sort of, it would be the similar thing to say, if you really want to test your IQ, I guess there are some online assessments.
Right.
But you really want to go with a Wechsler, Wechsler IQ test administered by a psychologist. In this case, there is a really excellent measure of emotion perception or reading emotions, and that is by Baron Cohen in the UK, and his test is online, or various forms of it are online. It's called Reading the Mind in the Eyes test. It's objective, and it's very, very well validated. So I think that's available and worth looking into as a good start.
Well, this has been a fantastic hour. I've enjoyed it so much. I can tell that Dr. Sharma has enjoyed it as well. But that is all the time we have. Thank you so much for listening. And I would like to very much thank our guest, Robin Stern. You can pre-order her book right now, The Gaslight Effect, How to Spot and Survive the Hidden Manipulation Others Use to Control Your Life. I can't wait to read that, which will be out on January 9th. You can buy that anywhere books are sold. And also thank you to David Caruso, whose book, The Emotionally Intelligent Manager, is available right now. Please join us next Sunday at 5 p.m. for more In Your Right Mind. And if you like what you hear, you can download this edition of the show as a podcast by going to iTunes or visit inyourrightmind.com to hear this show or previous broadcasts. We will see you next week.
Good night.
This show furnished by Dual Diagnosis Treatment Center.